Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're very excited to welcome social media expert Eric Alper to the show to talk about how to maximize your time on social media and how to help build your brand, whether for personal use or for a business. We then chat with health editor Ronnie Sheen about fat in your diet and why not all fat is bad for you. We then wrap things up with recording artist Dylan Murray, who's currently on tour with Nelly Furtado as her opening act. He talks about his new album called Inspiration and working with Nelly Furtado and what she has meant to his career.
Capture your need for sound.
Without a doubt, in the last 4 years or so, social media has become a very popular communications tool around the world. You can't go anywhere without seeing someone tweet, Facebook, or send out an Instagram. To give us a more in-depth look at social media and how you can make it work for you is Eric Alper, who is a social media expert. Eric has more than 95,000 followers on Twitter, over 10,000 Facebook friends, and maintains a very popular website that receives over 40,000 hits a week at www.thatericalper.com. Eric, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Great. Thank you very much for having me, Kelly.
So, Eric, you know, you're very successful on so many, you know, social media platforms. I have to ask you, when Facebook and Twitter came out, were you immediately intrigued?
I was intrigued by Facebook, even though that I'm not a very social person, despite my job of doing publicity. I find that most people aren't. But once I found out that all my friends were kind of on it, I quickly went to it. I got into a lot of the social media late. I was one of the last people on the planet to get a MySpace page. Facebook was there just as more of an interaction between people that you already know. But when Twitter came along, I easily hopped on that train right at the beginning because I love the fact that I can purge all of these useless facts and trivia and news items from my head onto a really short, concise tweet of less than 140 characters and reach, you know, so many people that I wouldn't never have the opportunity to reach before.
Did you sort of know very quickly that you could create, you know, a brand for yourself that would make you stand out above the crowd? Because, you know, for example, you've been named to Billboard Magazine's 140 Best on Twitter for the second year in a row, and it seems like you have to be a special person to get that accolade.
I had absolutely no idea what I was doing, and in fact, I kind of still don't, because the difference is that when I can talk to the bands and artists and brands about social media, there's really an end goal. It's for them, it's to help sell a lot of records. For them, it's to sell tickets. For them, it's to increase their fan base. Because I'm not one of those kind of people that has an end result. My end result is just to have fun and try to meet people and talk to people and kind of expand my brain and hopefully, you know, share some information and help out other people that might be looking for it. So when I got on it, it was just one of those things where I had no idea that any of this was going to happen. I'm glad it did, but really I'm kind of tweeting without a net and kind of doing things without a larger plan. You know, if I knew that 4 years, you know, previously that I would be talking to Kelly Alexander, I would probably be saying that you're lying. But, you know, it's a lot of really cool stuff, though.
Now, you know, I do follow you on Twitter, as do a bunch of my friends, and your tweets are definitely addictive, and I'm constantly retweeting them. And I think that anyone in the entertainment industry would, you know, find your facts very important to know about and sort of help them even with their own maybe show prep if they're doing radio or television work. I know you said you don't really have a grand plan, but are these conscious decisions on how you tweet, though, when you do have these sort of fast facts that you put out there?
Yeah, I do. I do. I don't mind tweeting. And actually, I like it. I don't mind tweeting about Justin Bieber and Nickelback just to get a rise out of people. Because I know that, you know, when you mention those two artists specifically, you know, you're bound to get some sort of engagement back. And I like that. I like the fact that I don't have to narrow my tweets down to one specific style of music or one specific, you know, brand opportunities. When I tweet about job postings, for instance, it really makes me feel good to know that there are people out there that may or may not know where to find, you know, jobs if they're looking for internships, for instance. But I think, you know, it's a little bit different than when you're an artist or when you're an industry person because, you know, you've got that job to do. When you're a band, your job is to create music. You have to create art. And before any social media activity, that's what you have to do. You have to be great at what you do. The social media will come later on. And I think that you can be a really great band or have a really great company and be okay at social media. But I think that it's really difficult to be awesome at social media but have a really awful brand, because you just won't get that kind of followers or engagement.
Now, you are very, you know, active on your social media. Do you actually find that it infringes upon your actual living time?
What's that? I haven't slept since, I think, 2006, but I love it. It's really crept into my personal life, and so I'm not one of these people that will think of something really funny or read something and then immediately go to the BlackBerry and start tweeting it out. I'm really specific with what I tweet out at what time, so sometimes I'll set them up ahead of time, or if it's somebody's birthday that's famous, or if there's a tribute going on because somebody passed away 10 years ago that day, I'll kind of angle those tweets and put, you know, cool quotes or, you know, maybe unseen videos that are on there. So with that thinking of it, it has crept into my life, but my life is built around music anyway. Before social media, I just spent all my time going to see shows. I still do that, but this is just another part of what I love to do, which is just being around music.
Joining us on the show is social media expert Eric Alper. Make sure to check him out on his website, thatericalper.com, as well as on Twitter, @thatericalper. What tips can you give to, you know, some of my listeners who are trying to, you know, increase their position on social media, whether it's for, you know, personal sort of satisfaction or, you know, for growing a brand or a company?
Yeah, I think that there's always a couple of rules to keep in mind. You know, twice a day, I tell the bands and the companies to quickly go through and respond to everybody on Twitter as much as you possibly can, or even on Facebook. You know, you don't have to read your entire thread. Just go through them and make sure that you're not being asked a question. You might have a concern. You might even have a complaint if you're a company. And those are the ones to kind of respond to. You know, there's so many different social media outlets out there. There's Twitter and Facebook, the revamp MySpace, there's Pinterest. So I think you've got to find out where your audience is first and spend a little bit more time on that. And I think it's also, you know, if you're a band or an artist, you know, the thing to keep in mind is that in the 70s and in the 80s and even going back to the 50s and 60s, fans never had access to artists before. If you wanted to go backstage, it was nearly impossible to do that and even talk to the bands. Like, forget it. There's no way that fans would be able to have that. But with social media, fans actually have that barrier completely dropped, where as an artist, you can make your fans' day or week or even month by just responding to them and blowing their minds, because they really don't expect that. So I think that with the social media comes a little bit more engagement that you can do with your fan base that you wouldn't otherwise get to do, say, face-to-face. You've got to also be able to create, and, you know, you can create blog posts on your website. You can create Facebook posts, newsletters, anything that you put out there. You know, your Twitter update should be your Facebook status. Your MySpace status should be what I can find out on your website. So, you know, if tweeting 20 times a day burns you out, then you're probably doing it wrong. You really only have to be doing it a couple of times a day, but make sure that, you know, that engagement does happen, because it's really important to your fans.
I wanted to bring you back to the point about how in the past, you know, artists sort of had that mystique where they weren't able to be in full contact with their fans. I recently interviewed Cece Peniston, who, as you know, had huge hits in the 90s, and she continues to do lots of good things today. And she actually said to me that, I guess it was sort of, the understanding that I got from her comment is that it was sort of mentioned to her from her record company at the time, or I guess people surrounding her, that, you know, you wanted to keep that mystique back in the 90s. And now she is, you know, has realized herself that, you know, if she doesn't sort of engage with her fans that she's had for years, that they will forget about her.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's more so than ever. I mean, if you're an artist from Montreal, for instance, your competition is not another band from Montreal. Your competition is Bruce Springsteen. Your competition is Lady Gaga. Your competition is anybody that is out there that is being successful, because there's only so much during the day where audiences and the general public listen to music. So you have to go out and you have to fight for that space for public knowledge and just for public persona. It's, you know, radio is still really, really important. But to a lot of bands, it's the least important thing on their mind, because those doors might be closed in one avenue, but the ability that you can be like an Amanda Palmer, for instance, who can sell out a show just by tweeting the details on tickets, or even raise over $1 million on Kickstarter to help her fund her next album, that's something that the record labels just, their marketing departments just can't do. So in one sense, yeah, that mystique is gone. I mean, when the Rolling Stones and Paul McCartney start tweeting, then you know that, you know, that the bandwagon is going on. And there does seem to be a little bit of that loss of mystery, but I don't think it's necessarily on the social media. I think it's just the fact that we're living just in a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week entertainment cycle, where if I want to know about my favorite artist, there are plenty of places to go where I can find out about them.
Now, a lot of people have, you know, day jobs, and it may be difficult for them to log on and update their social media during the day, like that 9-to-5, if you will, even though I know a lot of people have different hours. But for the time that they do have, how do you suggest they maximize it?
Yeah, it's not so much on the actual time of the day. It's really just about what you're doing. If you're a band, you know, start giving away your songs for free. Create that free downloadable EP that your fans can share, so that, you know, don't worry if you're an indie band. Don't worry right now about getting paid. Worry about being ignored. So it's not really the time that you're spending into it, but what you're actually putting out. So allowing your fans to share your new video, your new music, you know, some important facts, or a new T-shirt or poster design. That's really what you want them to help doing. If you've got, you know, if you've got a website, there are a lot of free great ones out there. I'm using WordPress, and that gives me the ability that during my downtime or my free time when I'm at home, I can set up posts well in advance, so that if I know that my fan base might be looking for information between the hours of 4 and 6 p.m. in my own time zone, then I can actually set up all of my tweets and my Facebook posts and my blog posts to go up at that time. So it may look like that I'm live tweeting right now, but then in some cases it's actually not. So it's not necessarily, you know, spending all of your time on it, but it's just creating that content for your fan base to share.
Now, we touched upon this briefly before, but I wanted again to just sort of put it out there in the fact that, you know, there are so many social media platforms. It's not just Facebook and Twitter anymore. Like you said, there's the revamped MySpace, Pinterest, Instagram. You know, there's obviously social media overload. So do you suggest that someone focuses on maybe social media platforms that they themselves really enjoy? Like, don't force themselves to go to Pinterest if that's not what their strong suit's going to be.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're a band and a couple of band members love to talk, but a couple of them don't get the ones that don't like to talk to be on Twitter. You know, let them go on something like a Pinterest, for instance, which is a really great site, which is more visual, which allows you to pin photos on this, like kind of like a board. And I know of a couple of bands that what they've done is that in order to brand themselves as a, you know, rough and ready, dirty rock and roll band, they post photos of bands that they love, like the Rolling Stones and the Who and Black Keys. And, you know, so if you like those bands, then you're probably going to enjoy this one. So that could be for, like, you know, some specific band members. But I think, you know, the most important thing out of all of it is that your website is something that you own. Everything that you do on social media, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, should always direct back to your homepage. And the reason for that is what we've seen with MySpace is that things are fads. And sometimes, you know, companies get sold and social media sites are one of them. And you don't actually own the content. What we're finding now with Facebook and also with a couple of other sites like Instagram is that you don't own your photos that you put on there. You might have them based on your computer, but you don't really own them once you stick it on there. So the one place where any company, whether you're a band or a brand, owns everything is your own website. So when I tweet something, for instance, it always directs back to my own homepage. If I'm going to put out, and if I'm a band, I put out a free MP3, I'm not letting people download it on Twitter. They have to go to the website in order to download it. And then that's when you can find out a little bit more information by asking them things like, what's your email address? What city do you live in? What province do you live in? So you can use that information for your benefit when you do go on on tour or you have something new to release.
How do you suggest someone stays relevant and, I guess, on message? Because I guess if I use an example, a company that maybe promotes health and wellness, you know, it might not want to be posting things about the best vodka brand.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, every band is a little bit different because everybody's got their own different fan bases. But I think just to lighten things up a little bit, that things don't always have to be so serious. And the ability that if you're on the road to ask people where the best places to eat are, to wish somebody a happy birthday, for instance, you know, to help create a song with your fan base and have them write the last line of their newest song, to help them create, you know, their new t-shirt designs or their new poster designs. I mean, that's really what you want to use it for. I see too many, not just bands, but brands in general have problems navigating the waters of social media because it is a really kind of dangerous place to be. You don't want to really talk about politics. You don't want to be insulting. You know, if anything that you can't say to your own mother face to face, don't post it. And think about what you're posting before you hit send, because you may want to write something that you feel really, really strongly about politically, but know that some of your audience members may not feel that way and actually might start to unfollow you or not be a fan of the band based on your tweet. So I think, you know, to stay away from the controversy a little bit and, you know, just make sure that what you're actually doing is creating content for it.
Do you have a few tips that you can give out to someone, you know, who is intent on trying to increase their followers, whether that's, you know, Facebook, Twitter, whatever?
Yeah, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. It's kind of like saying, if I'm a band, how can I actually sell more records? Well, the idea is that you're great. You're not just good, but you have to be great. And I think on Twitter, it's the same thing. If you create some really cool content and you're open about what you're doing, you're constantly tweeting, you're not doing it between the hours of only 1 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock in the morning, even though that may be your uptime, you know, you know that your audience might be sleeping at that time, that's not really going to help out the band a little bit. What you want to really realistically be doing when you're on Twitter is, yeah, you can increase your followers, but it's not necessarily about the numbers, because quite frankly, if I'm a band, I would rather have 500 followers that are willing to jump when I say jump, or buy the next release, or help out with creating a design for a poster, rather than 15,000 followers that are just not really interested in what I have to say.
Okay. And I wanted to ask this as well. In your opinion, how important is social media to someone in the entertainment industry, whether, you know, we're talking about a singer, actor, or even heading into the sports realm as well, like an athlete? Like, it feels like this is like an incredibly important tool for them.
Yeah, definitely. It's probably the greatest promotional tool that the entertainment industry has seen in decades. I mean, the ability that you can talk directly to the fan base and skip those traditional gatekeepers, whether it is radio or print or television, and have the words basically come from you, is a great tool for them, as long as they know that once they hit send, it's got the ability to travel far and wide. So they have to be a little bit cautious of it. But if you're in the entertainment industry, it's a great way to maintain your contacts. It's a great way to find out new people that are out there that are coming up. It's a great way to look for jobs. It's a great way to look for ideas and also just find out what other people are doing as well. So it's imperative, I think, that when you're in the entertainment world, whether you're in front of the camera or behind the scenes, to get on Twitter and Facebook and have your own site. Because I think that there's a lot of people out there that would really enjoy hearing what it's like being an athlete or being a publicist or working at a record label or being a DJ or a host.
Okay, fantastic. Well, Eric, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you very much, Kelly, for having me.
That's social media expert Eric Alper. Again, make sure to check out his website, thatericalper.com, and on Twitter, @thatericalper.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
With so many children and adults being overweight, many people find it hard to always be eating healthy. But could some health problems be related to a lack of good fats in our diets? Ronnie Sheen, who is the health editor at Fashion Magazine, joins us to talk about some of the things that she's uncovered about fats in our diets. Ronnie, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks so much for having me.
So why do, you know, we seem to think that all fats are bad for us?
Well, I mean, it's so all pervasive right now that fat is something that's bad for our health. It started in the early 80s, and the low-fat movement really built to the point where now it's just, when I was thinking about writing this story, I realized that everywhere in my diet, in my own, you know, food shopping experiences, I had that mentality when I was shopping. So every time I went to the cafe and I would order a latte, I would automatically say the word skinny before the word latte. And every time I went to buy yogurt, I would always go for the 0%. I would never choose the full fat because I felt like I was doing something bad for us. It's bad for myself. And I think that that's something, particularly women, we really feel that we're doing ourselves a disservice if we eat foods with fat in them.
That is, yeah. And it's like this pervasive attitude that's been around for a while. And I wanted to ask you as well, you know, speaking of fats, because there are good fats, what kinds of fats should we be eating more of?
Yeah, so fat is such a complex macronutrient. It has a lot of different fatty acids within it. So we've probably heard about monounsaturated fats. Those are found in nuts. We've heard a lot about polyunsaturated fats, which include omega-3s, and those are found in cold water fatty fish. And omega-3s have a lot of benefits for our health. And then we've also heard about saturated fats. So those are found in animal products and in dairy, in coconut oil. And saturated fat is a very complex nutrient. There's a lot of different types within that. And so I think, and then, of course, trans fats we know are bad for us. Those are hydrogenated oils generally that have been heated to very high temperatures. And most people understand now that trans fats are bad for us. So the ones to really focus on, I think, are the unsaturated fats. But there are also some types of saturated fat that can have health benefits.
Can I ask you as well, just because, you know, I know when I'm in the grocery store, I'm confused most of the time. So, so trans fats is obviously what people should be staying away from, but yeah, Unsaturated fats are ones that you should be on the lookout for.
Saturated fat is still a very controversial topic. Okay. The standard wisdom is that we should be eating very low amounts of saturated fat. We should be avoiding it. And that's just the Health Canada status. That's what they recommend. Some of the newer research that I've been reading and some of the newer literature, like books coming out on this subject, are starting to challenge that idea that some types of saturated fats can be good for us. And it's still contentious, but I thought that was a really interesting challenge to the status quo. So I can just briefly explain how saturated fat breaks down. There's short-chain saturated fat. It's all about the molecule length. So short-chain and medium-chain saturated fats, those are found in coconut oil. Butter has some short-chain saturated fats. Those ones, some of my sources are saying, are good for us in that the body doesn't necessarily store them as fat. Usually it sends them to the liver and the body burns them for energy, whereas it behaves quite differently with other types of fats. Longer-chain saturated fats are thought not to be as healthy. That's the kind usually found in meat fat. And so you still might want to limit the amount of fat you eat that occurs in meat. But I think the overall message is that fat that occurs naturally in whole food, in real food, is generally processed well by the body, and the body can take it in moderation. It can be very beneficial for it, and the body can actually deal with the effects from it. It's when you get saturated fat in the form of oils added to processed food and of course trans fats that the body has a real difficulty breaking it down.
That is great. I think that's going to be very helpful for people because I know, like I said, I am confused in the store most of the time. I just sort of head to the vegetables and hope for the best.
Well, that's never a bad idea.
So I'll also ask you, though, I guess when it comes to cooking, you know, mm-hmm. that's been sort of, I guess, a contentious topic as well. So is it still that we should be using like olive oil to cook?
Olive oil has been shown to not react that well at high temperatures. Heating is really the issue with a lot of oils. So, again, one of the registered dietitians I spoke to, she suggested using coconut oil to cook with because it can stand a bit of a higher temperature. And some of the vegetable oils, like canola and sunflower, those are quite high in omega-6 fatty acids. And omega-6 is an essential fat, which means that our body needs it because we don't make it ourselves. In our diets, we normally have very high omega-6, very low omega-3. That ratio should be smaller. So we should be eating more omega-3s, less omega-6 will generally bring us to the place where we want to be.
Gotcha. Okay. So in your kitchen, what would mm-hmm. you be cooking with?
I'm cooking with coconut oil.
Okay, good. Perfect.
Yeah.
So
I mean, coconut oil is huge right now. It's everywhere. Everyone's finding it. The thing to look for with that is virgin coconut oil or raw. Hydrogenated coconut oil is just as bad as any trans fat.
Okay, so virgin or raw coconut oil.
Exactly.
Got it. Now, yeah. What about fat in milk? What's the difference between skim milk versus, you know, homogenized milk?
Well, milk contains some saturated fat. It contains lots of different types of fat. But the argument now is that removing the fat from a whole product like dairy, from a whole food, a real food, is not as healthy as we've been led to think it is. And that the fat in yogurt, you know, one of the big problems about yogurt, I think, is that when this low-fat movement really rose to prominence, and food scientists were taking the fat out of your dairy, which is what happens when you buy low-fat yogurt, they found that it was quite unappealing. It was chalky. It was tasteless. And so in many cases in these products, what has happened is that sugar has been added to make it more tasty and to make it more appealing. And the sugar in those products is actually thought now to possibly be more of a negative influx on our health, including weight gain, than the fat itself was.
Wow. So there's a lot to be, like, learned from this.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's so confusing, but for me, what I've taken away from all the research is that when you stick with whole foods, you know, real food, then your body knows what to do with it. And it's very difficult to overeat when you're eating those whole foods. I think that when you eat a processed food, it's a lot easier to gorge on it. Whereas when you're eating full-fat yogurt, you get full pretty fast.
Right. I have a question for you about processed food. I try to stay away from it, but it doesn't always work out for me. So because my schedule is ridiculous, as is most people. So what do you say to someone who, you know, maybe once a week has to sort of down like a frozen lasagna?
Absolutely. You know, I completely empathize with the time crunch. You know, it's about doing your best. I think if you need to eat a frozen meal, have it and don't beat yourself up about it. I think it's just trying to make sure that the majority of what's in your diet is fresh food, is real food. It does take time to prepare, so it has to become a bit more of a priority. I've definitely found that I'm spending more time in the kitchen, and it's not ideal. But I think, you know, especially for things like snacks, that can be a good place to get in some healthy, real food. For instance, things like nuts and seeds, they're great sources of healthy fat. Avocado is an amazing source of really good fat.
Okay.
So you can have a bit of avocado, have a couple of nuts, and that's a good snack. So I think snacking is a good way to get rid of processed food.
Okay.
And then if you need to have a convenience meal, you need to.
You're going to hate me for this, but I'm going to admit this. I work out quite a bit, but on Friday nights, I have to tell you, I enjoy some chips.
Yeah.
I try to not eat too many of them, but I
and
have
my
them.
Dirty secret is I love salt and vinegar.
Okay, very good. So what do you say to someone who likes a chip or likes a pretzel or some of those things? Like, is once or twice a week, like if you have like a little bowl of chips or something, is that okay?
I'm not advocating any kind of diet here. I actually think that when you really restrict the things you like, often you end up having more of them because you don't want food to be associated with guilt and with restriction. It's, you know, it should be about enjoyment and about nourishing your body. So, you know, have those chips. And, you know, I'm certainly not saying to anybody that they should only be eating whole foods 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more about if the ratio in your diet is mostly whole foods, I think it's a really beneficial thing for your health.
I'm really glad you said that because I think it's very important for people to realize that, you know, you are going to have that frozen lasagna at some point, but if you're mainly trying to get in those whole foods, that you're doing yourself a favor.
Exactly. And maybe if you're having that frozen lasagna at lunch for lunch every day, that might be a habit that's worth looking into and trying to adjust.
Right. Okay. You're hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show, and joining me is Fashion Magazine's health editor, Ronnie Sheen. You can find her, by the way, at fashionmagazine.com and also follow them at Fashion Canada. Why do you think, you know, we are often feeling so much guilt, you know, when we go to grab those foods that are high in fat?
Well, I do think it's a cultural thing now. It's you know, that movement has become so all-pervasive that food, fat just has a negative rap. It really does. And fat is such a complicated thing that we often don't take the time to break down, you know, to really understand the specific types of fats and how they're working in our bodies. And so I think people get confused and they just sort of revert to the basic messages that we've always heard. But, I mean, some of the newer research that I was reading, you know, it was surprising to me, but it's fascinating. It's, you know, our cell membrane structure is built from fat. So we actually really need healthy fat in our diets. Our body needs it. And, you know, if you don't have that, or if you only eat, say, trans fats, unhealthy fats, then long-term you see that in health issues like dry skin, brittle hair and nails. There's also heart health issues are linked to it, and weight issues. So ironically, we might, you know, we feel the guilt usually because of the weight, you know, the weight gain. And ironically, we may be hurting ourselves, like hurting our chances of keeping to a healthy weight by not eating any fat at all.
In your research, have you found that there are specific times of the day that we should be eating fats, you know, like, or like even if it's the good fats? Like, I don't know if that's come into play at all in your research.
It didn't come into play actually too much in this story, but I think that's a really fascinating thing. I mean, there's definitely certain eating around exercise is you know, whether you eat carbs before for fuel and then fat afterwards to help build the cells, help the cells repair. There's a bit of that sort of information that I've read, but I haven't actually looked into that too deeply. I think that would be fascinating.
Fantastic.
The registered dietitian I spoke to, she said what she recommends is that every meal should include protein, healthy fat, and fiber. And so, you know, by that sort of reckoning, every time you eat, really, you should be balancing those macronutrients. And so fat should be every time you eat.
Right. That's fair. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we have a registered dietitian that joins us on the show. And I think one of her main messages from Kim Airy, who is our dietitian, she says, you know, that it's important to basically live in moderation, you know, with whatever you do.
Absolutely. Of course. And I think that is the dominating message. I think even within that, it's so hard to, you know, I mean, you have to think about portion control, but I think that having grown up in this sort of diet mentality, there's so many fad diets, you know, we almost study too much, like exactly how much we should be eating, or the counting the calories and, I think that when you're eating the whole foods, your body kind of tells you. It's about learning to read your body signs, learning to know when you're full, when you don't really need to eat more, you know, of whatever it is.
Yeah, and I think that if we took a page from, you know, people in the past, like our family members from generations ago, you know, they were eating whole foods for the most part and just moving more. And I think if we sort of kept that in our thought process, our lives might be better.
Absolutely. I mean, you can, if you eat your meals and your meals include that protein, the fat and the fiber in lots of veggies, I think that you don't need to sit there and drink, you know, a massive soda full of high fructose corn syrup or, you know, these unhealthy processed foods that are just so easy to keep eating and to overindulge in. I think that when you're full on a meal or made of whole foods, the way that I think we think most of our grandparents did, and I think they did, you know, food marketing is more of a recent phenomenon where processed foods are really marketed to us. And so I think that when you eat those whole foods, there isn't, you know, there aren't that many ads for, you know, full fat yogurt. Well, I mean, or for veggies, or for nuts. Like those, you don't really see commercials for those. They're not really promoted in the same way. So I think that when you really sort of focus more on those foods, the way that our grandparents did, I think it's probably a healthier way to go. I feel that way now.
Now, this article that you have written is very fascinating. And where can people take a look at it?
Oh, thank you so much. So, yeah, you can find it online at fashionmagazine.com/fatchance. And it's also in the February issue of Fashion, which is on newsstands.
Fantastic. Ronnie, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Kelly. It was great chatting with you.
It's Ronnie Sheen, health editor at Fashion Magazine. Again, you can find them fashionmagazine.com as well as at Fashion Canada.
Stand by.
The Love Zone
with Gina Lee
on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Welcome to The Love Zone. I'm Gina Lee. Sometimes it doesn't take much to get in the mood for love, but it doesn't hurt to take advantage of some natural aids that can help fan the flames higher. They say the way to a person's heart is through the stomach, so I'm going to explore some edible aphrodisiacs that you can use to whet the appetite for love. Shall I start with the most popular? I bet you can already guess what it is. Oysters. Yes, raw oysters have long been credited for increasing the libido, especially in men. They're very high in zinc, which raises sperm and testosterone production. So chuck a few of those bad boys down and it'll be on till dawn. Here's another classic aphrodisiac for you. Chocolate. Come Valentine's Day, all the stores will be stocked to the ceilings with boxes of these bonbons. Aside from it tasting good, there are a couple of chemicals that make chocolate sexy. It contains theobromine, a stimulating alkaloid similar to caffeine. Gets you going. Chocolate also helps the brain produce serotonin, the feel-good chemical that makes your toes curl in contentment. This may be why some people actually prefer having chocolate over sex. Remember, when it comes to chocolate, the darker, the better. Now, if sweets aren't your thing, there are a host of other edible aphrodisiacs to choose from, like asparagus. 17th century English herbalist Nicholas Culpepper wrote that asparagus stirs up lust in man and woman. Along with other great nutrients, asparagus contains folic acid, said to boost the histamine production necessary for reaching orgasm. So, see that you get those sexy spears on your plate. If veggies don't appeal to you, try some nuts. Almonds in particular. With their high levels of vitamin E and magnesium, almonds can improve your mood and general well-being, which is always a turn-on. Now let's not forget about fruits. Bananas are seen as an aphrodisiac and a symbol of fertility. Full of magnesium, potassium, and B vitamins, this phallic fruit contains the bromelain enzyme said to enhance the male libido. What do you call sliced bananas dipped in dark chocolate and sprinkled with slivered almonds? Three ways to heaven. Another fruit that's not as sweet but still sexy is the avocado. Associated with male sexuality, ancient Aztecs called the avocado tree ahuacuatil, or testicle tree, because of how pairs of the hanging fruit resembled, well, you know what. With a high content of folic acid, as well as vitamin B and potassium, avocados are also said to boost immune function. The creamy fruit also has a smooth texture that can be quite sensuous, so get cozy with your guacamole. There are many more aphrodisiacs out there, but I'll leave you with one final one. Raw egg yolks. High in vitamin B6 and B5, eggs help to balance hormone levels and fight stress. Raw egg yolks eaten before sex are considered to enhance one's libido. So if you've got a good control over your gag reflex, knock some back like Rocky Balboa and get in the bedroom. Bon appetit!
No way I'm leaving. You're my FDGA.
Yes, you are.
Alexander Show is Dylan Murray. Dylan is currently on tour with Nelly Furtado, has an album out called Inspiration. We're very excited to talk to you. Dylan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Dylan, can you tell us about how you got into music? Has it always been something that you wanted to do?
You know what? I don't know for sure if it's been something I've always wanted to do, but I do remember, you know, even as a young child, singing songs and, you know, reciting nursery rhymes. So it's definitely been something that's been fun for me for a long time.
How do you go about, you know, writing? Do you write the lyrics first, or does the melody have to come to you, or does it always sort of change and switch up?
For me, most of the time, a melody will come to me. I'll be playing something on the guitar, or like I said, a melody will just, you know, be floating around and humming a tune, and then I'll write the lyrics to it and maybe even come up with an idea before that or after that, and then this whole song hopefully gets finished and develops and gets finished.
Tell us about your album Inspiration. How did you come come to write it? And because it's called Inspiration, is there like a theme throughout the album itself, or are they all sort of standalone tracks?
You know what? There's a bit of a theme looking back at the album. I think for myself, initially putting the album together, there wasn't really a theme for the songs that were put on it. But now looking back at it, it almost feels like there's one secret hidden track there, which is actually, I believe, number 8. And the rest are sort of, it's a little diamond in the rough. And then the rest all sort of work together. And there's one song that sort of sticks out. So it's almost like a peak freen or something like that with a little jelly in the middle.
Do you have a song on the album that is like your all-time favorite, or are they all important to you for different reasons?
All the songs, yeah, I would definitely say they're all important for different reasons. They all, when I think about them, I can clearly remember a time in my life or something I've gone through after that resonates with me. My favorite recording on the album would be Music Pick Me Up. But I love all the songs, and they all, you know, all the songs resonate with me and definitely bring me back to where I was when I wrote them.
Why did you call the album Inspiration?
I called the album Inspiration because my manager said, why don't you call the album Inspiration? I think I was thinking of album names, and he had suggested that, and I was like, I don't know if I could live up to that. Inspiration, it's a big, bold, nice word. But I ended up taking it on. And here we are.
Can you tell us about your affiliation with Nelly Furtado? Like, how did you meet her? How did you get on her tour with her to open for her? And also, what was it like to have her work on one of your tunes, Be Okay?
Well, I met Nelly Furtado through a friend who was my manager at the time. And Nelly came out to a show in Toronto at a place called Revival. And I remember looking out into the crowd and seeing her at one point. Maybe that was a bit blurry, but... from there was one song that she liked that she told me about one song that she liked called Trampoline, which is on the album. And we ended up recording that song, which is on the album, like I said, and several others. And we ended up doing a duet together, one of my songs, Be Okay, out in Los Angeles. And that was really fun. And we did it with someone named John Shanks, who was a pleasure to work with as well. And she did some amazing ad-libs on it. And it almost feels like it's a new song. There's a version that I did on my album by myself, and there's one with her. And they are the same song, but they're almost like completely different because, you know, she added so much to one of them.
Has she given you any advice, Dylan, because she's obviously been in the industry for a while, and has she had any thoughts for you as your career keeps climbing?
You know what, she's always there to give advice if I need advice. I've asked her many questions, hopefully not too many questions, you know, but I try to be sparse and precise with my questions, and she's always there to help me with that, and she's, you know, somebody that I really look up to.
Now, I read that you have performed at, you know, a bunch of different places in Toronto, that you've basically played everywhere. What, in your mind, do you find is different from playing at all of these places at home in Toronto as opposed to being out on the road and discovering new crowds?
Well, that's a great question because I did play my hometown, Toronto, on the 24th of January, and that was wonderful because I was out playing different places and I came back. Sometimes it can get monotonous playing in the same town or the same venues. And that's why going other places and meeting new people and performing for different towns and trying different things out can be so exciting. But then it's, you know, it's always great to go home and have the crowd be receptive, still receptive to your music.
Who do you look up to musically? Like, I know we've talked about Nelly Furtado, but is there other people out there that you find have really like resonated with you and have maybe even played a part in how you do what you do?
Yes, I would say big influences when I was younger were, I'd say, Counting Crows and Pearl Jam and Bob Marley, and then guys like reggae performers like Sizzla Kalonji or Buju Banton or Beanie Man, Barris Hammond, all of those gentlemen, and, you know, Missy Higgins as well, who's an artist from Australia. They all continue to inspire me, and there's many more.
I wanted to ask you about Jamaica, because you talk about it quite a bit on your website, and I understand it has a special place in your heart.
Yes, it does. I guess I can elaborate on that. I've been many times, going down for the past 10 years or so, and helping out, you know, where I can, as I went down with a group that was, you know, bringing school supplies to children that might have needed it at the time. And so it has a big, you know, it's dear in my heart, because I've gone so many times and I've met so many friends. And the reason that I went down initially was because I love the music, and I wanted to, you know, I knew I'd be working with students, which I thought was really interesting and fun. And so it's a place that I would say I know pretty well, and so it definitely is, like, almost feels like a second home in a way.
Would you ever consider, like, moving there full time?
You know what? I don't really know. I think it would be great. I'd love to be able to do that. I just don't know where music's taking me at this point, so it's hard to sort of settle down really in one place.
What would you say to someone who is, you know, starting out on their musical journey and, you know, might be a little bit confused or not sure of how to get going and get to where you are now and stuff? What would you say to them?
I would say, you know, keep on going, keep on striving for what it is that you really want to do, and make sure you keep in mind, you know, your big goals, your long-term goals, and your short-term goals, and try to keep them, if you can, separate, I would say. That's what I've done, because sometimes it's hard to focus on too many things at a time. So I have, like, my big long-term goals, and I have, you know, short-term goals as well. So I'd say, you know, keep doing that, or just, you know, stick with a plan A if you want as well. That took me, you know, as far as I am now as well, so.
And what can we expect from Dylan for the rest of 2013?
2013, well, like, as you know, my album is out. I believe you know that. I forget if I mentioned that. It's out, and you can get it on iTunes, and so I will be just promoting, or if you will, like, performing, so that people can be aware of the new songs that are on my album, the songs on my album, and I'll be performing, I guess, wherever it takes me.
Awesome. Dylan, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me, Kelly.
That's Dylan Murray. Again, you can check him out on his website, iamdylanmurray.com.
I'm Dylan Murray, and you're listening to The Kelly Alexander Show on kellyalexandershow.com.
I was on the grind, I could hardly find time to be with you. You were always there, but I never cared until you went away. Thinking back to then, what I should have done to show you my love. I can't believe I let you. I can't believe I let you slip away. Are you gonna be okay? I've been doing so much thinking about you. Fall asleep and I start dreaming about you.
Thinking about you, fall asleep and I start dreaming. Bring on the remix.
Immigrants taking over. Mr. Worldwide, Flavio, Ariana, salute. Let's have some fun.
When I hear the ocean,
that's Ariana and Pitbull with Sexy People, the Liam Keegan radio edit on The Kelly Alexander Show. As always, a big thank you going out to my guests, Eric Alper, Ronnie Sheen, Dylan Murray, and Gina Lee with The Love Zone. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from H. Jackson Brown Jr. 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things that you didn't do than by the ones you did do. So throw off the bow lines, sail away from the safe harbor, catch the trade winds in your sails, explore, dream, discover. Now, next week on the show, we're very excited to welcome our movie critic, Gray Drake, who also is a senior editor at Rotten Tomatoes. She's going to talk about the upcoming Academy Awards and who she thinks has the best chance to walk away with an Oscar. Now, don't forget to check out our social media. Follow us on Twitter at KAlexanderShow. Check out our YouTube channel. We've got tons and tons of interviews on there for you. Everything from celebrity interviews to how to deal with skincare. YouTube.com/KellyAlexanderShow. And as always, check us out for blogs and more posts on our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have a great week. You and I will chat soon.